Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Ariana Prale in for Mina Kim. Federal student loan relief is set to expire at the end of the year, burdening many who are already struggling amid the pandemic with another monthly payment to consider. President-elect Joe Biden has committed to canceling $10,000 in student debt for all borrowers. Other Democratic leaders such as Chuck Schumer and Elizabeth Warren are calling for up to $50,000. On Tuesday, Senator Warren again advocated for debt cancellation at a Senate hearing with Federal Reserve Chairman Jay Powell.
This is the single most effective economic stimulus that is available through executive action.
We'll discuss the different proposals on the table and the growing demands to cancel student debt. That's next, after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Ariana Prale in for Mina Kim. Come January, 42 million borrowers are set to resume making student loan payments that were put on hold as part of the Federal CARES Act relief package. And at a time when many are still unemployed or struggling to keep up with rent and bills as coronavirus cases continue to rise. Even prior to the pandemic, student loan debt was in crisis, ballooning to a record of nearly $1.6 trillion in debt as of this year, almost double the amount of debt in 2010, not to mention the disproportionate impact the crisis has had on students of color. Pressure is building on President-elect Joe Biden to take executive action to address the student debt crisis once in office. Here with me to talk through the leading loan forgiveness proposals and what's at stake for those struggling with student debt is Danielle Douglas-Gabriel, reporter covering economics of education for The Washington Post. Welcome to Forum, Danielle Douglas-Gabriel.
Thanks for having me.
And also joining me is Ashley Harrington, Federal Advocacy Director and Senior Policy Counsel at the Center for Responsible Lending. Welcome to Forum, Ashley Harrington.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
But before we dive into our panel, I'd like to welcome Christian Hernandez, who is currently paying back loans he took out to attend ITT Technical Institute, a for-profit school that filed for bankruptcy and closed in 2016. Christian, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So ITT Tech is a school that has, you know, been the subject of lawsuits, some of which were successful in canceling student debt for many students on account of fraud, but not all. What's been your story with that situation?
I'm part of the bracket where I don't fit into the three-year post school graduation. And so I've been trying to get that loan forgiven for the last 2 years, and I've been denied three times now through Fed loans and my private loan holder. Mm-hmm. And I, as of this point, I'm still paying on those loans, even though that school has been bankrupt since 2016.
So with payments on track to resume in January, how are you feeling about that? Like, has it been a difference to have this relief during the pandemic so far?
It has, yeah. It's not completely canceled out. I'm still accruing interest on a lower percentage. But coming January, I'm going to see that full interest rate go up. My payment's going to go back up. And I'm just looking forward to some sort of relief from the new administration, whether that's the full $10,000 or through executive order or some other method that is being proposed right now.
Because I know you shared with our producers that it's about 5% of your take-home pay otherwise that you're paying when loans are active, when the loan payments are active. Is that right?
That's correct.
And so, yeah, you mentioned that you are hoping for some form of relief. What would be your ideal plan in your eyes that would help you feel just less anxious?
I would like to see it come into the House or be presented as a bill that is actually going to be voted on. And just knowing that that's there present would be relief. But I would love to see some sort of cancellation, whether it's not the whole thing, at least a percentage, or a compensation on what's already been paid off if I don't fit within the requirements of getting forgiven.
And if there isn't action either by Congress or by the incoming president in time, and these payments are resuming, just what's that going to do in terms of just kind of your everyday life?
It's a decision between paying the rent, purchasing higher quality groceries, or going down and, you know, getting the lower quality things that I need on a daily, and paying these loans that no longer have any merit or accredited for. So it's tough. It's tough going into that thought process. And, you know, I'm just hoping that something happens before then.
Well, thank you for sharing your story and your thoughts with us, Christian Hernandez.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. And Danielle Douglas Gabriel, does the concern we just heard from Gabriel resonate with some of the stories you're hearing in your reporting on this issue?
Completely. There are a lot of people just like him who are really concerned about what January will hold for them, and then also about whether President-elect Biden will be serious in his proposal of canceling at least some portion of federal student loan debt. The prospects are pretty good at this point. You know, I think as recent as last week, President-elect Biden said that student debt cancellation is definitely a part of his recovery plan for the economy. Now, what that looks like has not exactly been sketched out at this point, as far as whether it's through executive action or through congressional action.
Right. And Chuck Schumer and Elizabeth Warren are pushing for executive action. Correct. Yeah. And really, what are the plans that are in play at this point?
So on the campaign trail, President-elect Biden had said that he would hope to cancel at least $10,000 worth of federal student loan debt as a part of an economic relief plan. Now, there are authorities in play that many people believe that he could use through executive action in order to bring that to fruition, kind of like a disaster relief effort in that respect. He had also said that he would like to cancel $10,000 of debt for people who make under $125,000 a year, attended a public college or university or historically Black institution or minority serving institution. That would take congressional action. What has been a bit of a debate for among the camp that believes in debt cancellation is the amount, among other things. But certainly while President-elect Biden has said 10,000, Senator Schumer and Warren have asked for at least $50,000 of debt, with the understanding that for a lot of people who went to grad school, the amounts are much higher, and that graduate education has taken on kind of a racial inequality aspect to it, because there are a lot of Black and Brown students who feel that they need to get a graduate degree in order to be competitive with their white counterparts who have just a bachelor's.
Right. And Ashley Harrington, that does bring up that, you know, we've seen with COVID-19 have its disproportionate impacts on Black and Brown people, and the same with the impact of student loan debt having this disproportionate impact, women as well. Can you speak some more about that issue?
Absolutely. I think it's just always important to remember, I like to say that, you know, the student debt crisis, particularly for Black borrowers and for other borrowers of color, is really, you know, the product of the racial wealth gap, and it's exacerbating at the same time. You know, there is a reason why Black borrowers have to borrow more, are more likely to borrow and to struggle more in repayment. It's because this is, you know, centuries and decades of inequities have built on top of each other, from exclusion, from homeownership opportunities, from other higher ed funding opportunities, from things like that. And the fact that they have to now borrow more, the fact that the Great Recession impacted Black and Brown communities more than it impacted other communities, and that they have yet to recover. These communities lost $1 trillion of wealth after the Great Recession, and they never recovered from that. And so all of this compounds on top of each other to get to a place where it's an untenable situation for a lot of people, but it is absolutely really unsustainable and at crisis levels for Black borrowers who are defaulting. Even Black graduates are defaulting more than white non-completers. And we should all be concerned about that. We should really be concerned about how this is just the newest example of how racial inequities and systemic disparities continue to play out in this country because we don't do anything about the root causes.
And when these payments are set to resume in January, it's not just for its payments. It's those are also that may be getting wages garnished, right, if they're in default. Danielle Douglas-Gabriel, just what are the logistics of what's going on here? Because it sounds like from your reporting that it's going to be, if they do resume, if there isn't another relief package that's come through, that it's going to be pretty complicated on all sides.
Certainly. And there is some good news, but it's very cautious in being too optimistic about this. But I'm hearing from student loan servicing companies this week that they've received notice from the department to kind of hold off on issuing notices. Now, that would give them a bit more leeway in restarting the system until at least probably February. If that were the case, then the Biden administration could use executive action to extend the moratorium. Now, the Department of Education will not confirm that. People within the department are telling me that is correct. But, I don't want to get people's hopes up too soon until they're willing to at least give some confirmation. And certainly the president-elect has not said for certain whether he'd use executive action to extend the moratorium. But if that were not to happen, now, there are people for whom they may not see their payments go back into effect until the end of the year. Until the end of the month of January, and it could possibly kick right back into another moratorium if it was extended through executive action. But there are a lot of folks who were facing wage garnishment before this order was put into place in March, and for whom they were having actually their wages garnished, and many of them continued to have their wages garnished through these months because the system is so antiquated in the way that it functions that it was very difficult, from the department's own words, for them to be able to completely stop it. As of, I think, November 12th, there were still at least 15 people who were having their wages garnished by the Education Department 9 months after the moratorium was put into place. All that to say that it would be exceedingly confusing and very harmful for folks who are facing wage garnishment to face that yet again, even if for a few weeks, the possibility of that being able to stop on a dime is just, and turn on a dime, it's just very difficult to see that happening.
We're talking about student loan debt crisis with Danielle Douglas-Gabriel, reporter covering economics of education for The Washington Post, and Ashley Harrington, federal advocacy director and senior policy counsel at the Center for Responsible Lending. And you, our listeners, have you or are you struggling with student loans? How are you feeling about student loan relief potentially ending in January? And do you think the government should cancel some or all student debt? Why or why not? Give us a call now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. We'll have more of our conversation after the break. I'm Ariana Prail. This is Forum. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Ariana Prail in for Mina Kim. We're talking about the student debt crisis, the added burden of this debt during the pandemic, and calls from some lawmakers to cancel it. We've been talking with Danielle Douglas-Gabriel of The Washington Post and Ashley Harrington of the Center for Responsible Lending. And joining me now is Cody Hunanian, Program Director at Student Debt Crisis, an advocacy organization seeking to end student debt. Welcome to Forum, Cody Hunanian.
Thank you so much for having me today. I very much appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, so your organization was one of many that sent a letter to President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris advocating for action on student loan cancellation. Specifically, what kind of action would you like to see and do you think is necessary right now?
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And I do have to acknowledge we have Ashley Harrington on today's forum from the Center for Responsible Lending. They are also part of this large coalition. The movement to cancel student loan debt has gone from something discussed amongst a fringe of advocates and grassroots organizers to something that has become a groundswell that includes civil rights, consumer rights, and student organizations. So I'm honored to be a part of that. Student debt crisis, we are right now calling on the president-elect Joe Biden to cancel student loan debt on day one using executive action precisely because we know he has the authority and the power to do so. And during this pandemic and this unprecedented time, we need as much relief and as bold, broad action as possible.
And we heard earlier from Christian Hernandez, a graduate of ITT Tech, just about his own concerns and worries of when payments go back into play and the effect it would have on his life. Can you shed some light on some of the kinds of stories and circumstances people are experiencing that you're hearing through Student Debt Crisis?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Student Debt Crisis, we represent about 2 million people across the country with student loan debt, and they're constantly sharing their stories with us. You know, one person that comes to mind is Chrissy from Connecticut. Chrissy is like many Americans. There might be a COVID-19 health emergency happening across the country, but life was already happening before this pandemic. And Chrissy is a cancer survivor. She's immunocompromised. She can't leave her home for risk of dying, frankly, during this time. She told us that she has no idea how she's ever going to financially recover. And with federal student loan payments resuming after December 31st, she really has no way of supporting her family. She says she has no savings, no food for her children. So right now, this student debt crisis, this COVID-19 crisis is all colliding with what is a personal crisis for Chrissy and her family.
And what's your response to a comment we have? A listener tweets, where is the personal responsibility in all this? Borrowers agreed to take these loans and used those funds.
Yeah, well, you know, I think from my experience talking to borrowers every day, most student loan borrowers are responsible. In fact, most student loan borrowers tell us that they want to pay back their loans, and many of them feel a great deal of shame when they can't afford their payments. But the reality is that the system is just fundamentally broken. Even those people who want to pay back their loans are facing an uphill battle when it comes to the obstacles their student loan servicers put in front of them, and also a myriad of other issues. You know, we talked to Ivan in California. He spends $1,200 per month on his student loan payments, but he's a gig worker and he's completely out of work during this pandemic. This is just one of the examples of someone who wants to make their payments, but can't because of the circumstances, particularly around the pandemic. And, you know, he tells us right now he has to pay his mortgage, he has to pay utilities and food to survive. And so there's a set of priorities, too, that borrowers have to consider when it comes to being a responsible person, partner, and a parent.
Well, thank you for joining us and being able to shed some light, some more of the stories that you've been hearing through your work. Cody Hunanian, Program Director at Student Debt Crisis, an advocacy organization seeking to end student debt. Thanks for coming on Forum.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
And let's go to a caller now, Rini in Oakland. Hi, Rini. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. You know, there is a story that's not really being told too much. I have a very dear friend's daughter, Mary, who's 22, just graduated from nursing school. They immediately put her in the COVID ward in Missouri, and her stories are blood-curdling. And if we could pardon the debt, I mean, she's still paying off her school loan while she is saving lives. Well, she's not saving lives. She's zipping up body bags is what she's doing. And I think the first people in line should be our healthcare workers to get their loans expunged. I love Cody's comment.
Thanks for sharing your comment, Rini. And Danielle Douglas-Gabriel, what's your reaction to Rini's? Like, is there prioritization being considered in some of these plans or anything along those lines?
Well, there is actually legislation in the House that was sponsored by, I think, Carolyn Maloney to ensure that frontline workers would have student debt forgiveness that hasn't really made its way all the way to the Senate at this point, but it is a consideration of the Democratic Party, and I think it is something that could perhaps receive some bipartisan support, perhaps more so in a tweaking of the existing public service loan forgiveness platform that has its share of problems as well, but would account for some of the public frontline workers who work at public institutions.
Okay. And next, let's go to caller Eric in Santa Cruz. Eric, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions. The first one has to do with student loan interest rates. I do not understand why student loan interest rates are so high. I mean, most people that I know, and including myself when I had loans with the federal government, were between 6 and 8%. And I know people with huge student loan burdens, trying to pay down your principal on your loan is impossible when you have such a high interest rate on, say, a, you know, $50,000 to $200,000 loan burden. It's just impossible. So that's one question. I know a lot of people who have refused or who are reluctant to refinance with private lenders because of potential loan forgiveness options, but they're not able to make any meaningful payments on their loans because of the extremely high interest rates. And then the other question that I have is relating to people who have refinanced with private lenders, their student loans with private lenders. What happens to those people that have student loan debt but, you know, are now paying it off with a, you know, a private bank?
All right. Thanks, Eric. Ashley Harrington, do you have any insights for Eric regarding the high interest rates?
Yeah, absolutely. So the interest rates are also governed by statute. So there's a statute that determines that the interest rate is based on the treasury rate plus a certain percentage and based on the type of loan that you have. But absolutely, interest is out of control, interest and fees in general. And so we would like to see lower interest rates, but also just a cap on interest in general. You shouldn't be able to just accrue unlimited interest. There are people who would have long paid off way more than they ever borrowed, but their interest has exceeded that amount. And that's not okay. We have a system that is so fundamentally flawed in so many ways. And that's a perfect example of how that plays out. So absolutely, the interest rates are too high, but also the ability to accrue interest is out of control. For those, and for people who have refinanced into private loans, that's why we at the Center for Responsible Lending, we are very reluctant to encourage people to refinance into private loans. It's really a personal choice you have to make and really think about, given interest rates and given what you lose. You do lose options to some of the federal forgiveness programs. But there have been some proposals to also help private student loan borrowers. So there have been proposals in the HEROES Act. There was actually an amendment to NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, in the House. There have been other efforts to provide some level of cancellation and relief to private student loan borrowers as well. So they are definitely a part of that conversation. And I think most advocates would also advocate that there be some relief for private student loan borrowers, but that would be a separate conversation and a separate type of action, because there is a lot that can be done for federal student loan borrowers, even by executive action. We've been talking about extending that payment suspension, but you know, a lot of cancellation can be done by executive action as well. And so we are really encouraging the Biden administration to keep their promise on debt cancellation and not even go through Congress, but to do it by executive action. For private student loan borrowers, it will take legislation and some appropriations because of how it would have to be refinanced or paid off through the Treasury. But it's definitely something that is on the radar, not just for advocates, but for lawmakers as well.
Well, thank you for bringing that question, Eric. This listener tweets, I had a ton of student debt. I paid it off because I lived in fear and found a way, but don't wish that upon anyone. Isa writes, I have student debt. I consolidated loans long ago with a private lender and federal forgiveness would not apply to me, but I still support student debt forgiveness for others and for the future. And this listener tweets, in some areas, bachelor's degrees aren't enough. I have two, and I couldn't get a job for more than $12 an hour in 2012. I had to go back and get a master's degree, and now I have $70,000 in student loan debt. So just hearing some more of these testimonies. And now we'll bring into the conversation a perspective that's a bit more critical of the calls to cancel student debt. Matthew Chingos, Vice President of Education Data and Policy at the Urban Institute. Welcome to Forum, Matthew Chingos.
Thanks for having me.
So you've argued that canceling student loan debt would not be a cost-effective form of stimulus, which is being, you know, argued by like Senator Warren and others, and specifically that Biden's proposed $10,000 debt cancellation wouldn't be. Why not?
Well, it depends on what you're comparing it to. If you're comparing it to nothing, right? A lot of folks are out there saying,
Congress isn't going to do anything, they should do this by executive action, well, then maybe it's worth considering. But if there is an opportunity to do this in a more careful, targeted way, and if your goal is to stimulate the economy, well, then you want to write people checks that they can spend now. Whereas if you forgive their debt, that's reducing payments they may have to pay in the future. And as you know, right now, payments are canceled. The Biden administration, I expect, will extend that pause on payments. So it's not going to put more money in people's pockets right now relative to writing them a check. But you need Congress to write those checks, which is why folks are saying, well, maybe you should do this alternative thing that's not as good by executive action.
So there could be a both and, though. They're right. It's just a matter of seeing if Congress would agree to that.
That's right. You would need Congress to do additional forms of stimulus. The question with doing student loan forgiveness by executive action, a big question about it is whether it's taxable or not. People are arguing about that. If it's taxable, it could actually be a negative stimulus because now you get this forgiveness, say, of $10,000 of your debt that you would have paid off over a long period of time. But now you have a big tax bill on it now. So that could actually blow a hole in your finances. So that's a crucial question that people have been arguing both sides of.
Right. And it would have to be
under. But we can address. Sorry.
Oh, is this Ashley Harrington?
Yeah.
If you just want to jump in quickly, Ashley.
Yeah, just we can absolutely address the tax issue as well. And I think for advocates, it should never be an either or choice. That is too often the choice that we have, that communities and individuals, particularly communities of colors, have been forced to make, is choose between these options when we know that all of these are problems, all of these are steps that need to be taken. And we can absolutely address the tax issue as well. And that, so none of these are reasons not to provide something we know will provide relief for a bunch of people just because there's also other things we should be doing.
Right. And Matthew Chingos, one of the arguments against debt cancellation policy is that it's like a regressive tax cut, right? Applied uniformly, regardless of income. And some are opposed to the idea of college graduates who may earn more benefiting from this kind of action. Do you agree with that assessment?
I mean, it's not agree or disagree. I mean, it's a statement of fact that people who have more student loans tend to be people with higher incomes on average. Obviously, a lot of lower income folks have student loans or struggling with those student loans. So if you forgave all the student loan debt, that would be very regressive. It's less regressive if you do a limited amount, like, say, $10,000. And policymakers like Senators Warren and Schumer, who have proposed up to $50,000 in debt, have said in their Senate resolution that action should be taken to make sure it doesn't go to the highest income borrowers. So I've seen some support out there for putting some income testing in here to try and focus the support on folks who need it the most and not make it sort of a regressive bailout for more affluent households.
So what do you think we should do to kind of get out of not this, just this immediate crisis during the pandemic, but the long-term student loan debt crisis?
I think long-term, it really has to involve the president and Congress working together. We really need to fix these problems, both going forwards, but also looking backwards. And people clearly took out loans that shouldn't have been made. And there's a case to be made for forgiving some of those loans. But I think if we can't, and as Ashley said, it has to be a both end kind of conversation. We can't just think about what to do with folks with debt now and then go back to making the same loans and the same terms tomorrow. We need to fix the system going forward so we don't repeat the mistakes of the past. And then also, you know, make some reparations for those mistakes that were made in the past.
And so is there also, you think, this an argument that's kind of like go hard or go home, in a sense that like debt cancellation as a whole is not effective without this bigger reform?
I think the risk is if you do debt cancellation without the bigger reform, you're kind of gunking up the system, right? You're saying, okay, we're going to sort of just step in and wipe out some debt for people. And then tomorrow they're going to wonder, well, should I take on more loans? Should I take on debt maybe I don't need? Is more forgiveness coming? If you do it in an unprincipled way. If you do it in a principled way and say, hey, we should have never made all these loans to these terrible colleges or some set of for-profit colleges or what have you, we're going to kick them out of the loan program, cancel the debts we're made. Now people aren't going to try and wonder, oh, well, should I go to some terrible college? Well, I can't go get a loan there anymore. But if you don't do it in that sort of principle consistent way, I worry that you would undermine the system going forward and potentially do some harm, unintentionally for sure. But there's a risk of that.
And Cook, I know we're have to let you go in a moment, but I'm just curious about your thoughts on, I don't know if you saw the opinion piece that author Roxane Gay wrote for the New York Times last month. It was in favor of debt cancellation, and she was kind of framing it as part of a larger social contract. And she said, quote, "No one benefits from everything our government does. I don't have children, but some of the money I pay in taxes goes toward education." And then she goes on to say it's part of the social contract, but that contract holds up only when we are all willing to abide by its terms. What's your reaction to that?
I mean, I agree that we don't have to think of every policy as something that has to be for everybody. Clearly, there's a set of people that have student loans. I think some of them are doing pretty well, you know, zooming from home, you know, have good incomes, can repay those loans. Some people were really wronged by this system. You know, Ashley referenced the, you know, racially disparate impacts of the student loan issue. So we know that families of color are especially hard hit by the student loan crisis. Due to pre-existing issues of like the racial wealth gap, you know, other forms of racism, both historically and today. So the way I really think about this issue is we want to address it, but we want to go to where the real issues are within the thing. We don't need to treat every student loan borrower as exactly the same and should be addressed with exactly the same policy. We can think about tailored solutions that really get at the most important problems in the most effective way.
That's Matthew Chingos, Vice President, Education, Data, and Policy at the Urban Institute. Thanks for joining us on Forum for this conversation.
Thank you.
We're talking about the student loan debt crisis. Also with me is Danielle Douglas-Gabriel, reporter covering economics of education for The Washington Post, and Ashley Harrington, Federal Advocacy Director and Senior Policy Counsel for the Center for Responsible Lending. And you, our listeners, have you or are you struggling with student loans? How are you feeling about student loan relief potentially ending in January? And do you think the government should cancel some or all of student debt? Why or why not? Give us a call now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. We'll get to more of your calls and comments after the break. I'm Ariana Prail in for Mina Kim. You're listening to Forum.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Ariana Prail in for Mina Kim. We're talking about student loans with Danielle Douglas-Gabriel of The Washington Post and Ashley Harrington of the Center for Responsible Lending. And let's go to caller Rosemary in San Francisco. Rosemary, you're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm interested in what's going to happen with all of us who are senior citizens. I'm 66 now. On Social Security and went to undergrad and graduate school as a single parent and now owe six figures in student loans. Plus I helped my son, so I have another five figures to help through that. And I've been not forgiven, but on pause until the beginning of the year. And I'm wondering what, if anything, kind of relief will be going to those of us who will not ever be able to pay off our student loans.
Thanks for that question, Rosemary. Danielle Douglas-Gabriel, your thoughts.
It's a great concern. I think that there, as much as this issue has been framed around the debt held by younger Americans, there are a lot of older Americans who have debt themselves from their own education, as well as debt that they are holding for their children or helping their children pay off. Now, certainly, federal loan forgiveness of $10,000 would be of assistance to people with holding their own debt. We're a lot less clear on what that means for people with Parent PLUS loans, the federal loans that are provided to parents of college students. The Biden administration has not said anything at this point, but that doesn't mean that it's completely off the table. And I think it's something that's going to require further investigation in the coming months.
And also for you, Danielle, we have a comment from Andrea, who writes, my son graduated from UC in June and has $30,000 of loan debt. We've been getting notices saying we need to start paying soon. If the new administration cancels student loans, how soon could that happen and how will we be notified? I know you've been mentioning this before, but I know it's the, you know, top of mind for our audience.
Certainly. I mean, it's a little unclear on exactly how soon this could happen. You know, the Biden administration wouldn't come in until the end of January. As I mentioned earlier, there's credible information that the Education Department is trying to instruct its loan servicers to kind of delay their notifications, to slow down the restarting the student loan system until February, which would give the Biden administration some time to extend the moratorium by executive action if Congress fails to do so in another stimulus plan. Now, you know, the hope is that that could take place immediately. You know, the moratorium, when that came into effect, it did not take months or weeks for student loan payments to be paused. It happened fairly immediately, and that is the consideration that is before us, that will be the same thing here. Now, I wish I knew exactly when and how quickly that could happen. I know I have lots of people contacting me asking that question, including family members. But for right now, it's a little unclear.
Okay. Let's go to caller Jessica in Oakland. Jessica, you're on.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to emphasize the benefits that I've received as a public school teacher in Oakland. After graduating with a master's and credential from Cal, the state of California had the Apple Loan Forgiveness Program for public school teachers to teach in high-needs communities. And I benefited from that for the first 5 years of my teaching career, which helped me focus on my work and have a little bit less stress around paying back my loans. And I've managed to stay at that same school for now, my 14th year. And I think these types of loan forgiveness programs allow for folks to want to work in communities, particularly in high needs areas, whether it's through healthcare or mental health or teaching even, and allow them to do the work that they're passionate about with a little less stress and a little more comfort in knowing that the loans that I took out for school is actually being supported by the federal government.
Oh, I think we lost you, Jessica. But we got the gist of your comment. And Annie has a comment who writes, I have a student loan that I am paying back. It started as a $32,000 loan back in 1985. Right after graduation, I was unable to work due to penalties and interest. The loan amount now is over $500,000. I can never catch up to it, and I was told that I will have that loan until I die. I am now 61 years old. Loan forgiveness would help the future generation and help young graduates to get a financial footing in this economy. Ashley Harrington, can you speak to the comments we heard from the caller and from Annie in relation to also the proposed roadmap that you and your center have put out?
Absolutely. I think just it's heartbreaking to hear the realities and to just once again know that these are not anomalies, right? The situation that these callers are talking about is happening to a lot of people. So I don't want y'all to feel like y'all are alone or this is something that's just happening to you. For the borrowers who are over 60, actually 1 in 7 federal student loan borrowers, I think, is over 60. So there's a couple of things going on. It's the piece that Danielle talked about. It's the Parent PLUS loans. It's the borrowing for your own education. It's the borrowing for dependents. And we absolutely agree that any cancellation should apply to all types of federal student loans, including Parent PLUS loans, and all types of income-based repayment should apply to all federal loans, including Parent PLUS loans. But I think these are just indications of just how far the system has gone, how messed up the system has gotten, and how much course correction we have to do. And so that's what we talk about in the report you just mentioned. We talk about not just the need for cancellation. Absolutely, there has to be broad-based cancellation. Even if you do $50,000 of cancellation across the board, you are still going to have a lot of people who have a lot of debt. The caller just mentioned having $500,000 in debt after over 30 years in repayment. That's a problem. So we actually also advocate for fixing income-based repayment. There should only be one income-based repayment plan, and it should be based on 8% of your income above 250% of the poverty line, and it should have a term of 15 years. Income-based repayment shouldn't be 20 or 25 years, and no one should be in repayment for 30 or more years because they've had periods of hardship. That is actually, that is antithetical to what we expect for people who go to college and have and are trying to better themselves. We want them to be able to move on and achieve financial security and contribute to the economy and their communities in other ways. And so many borrowers aren't able to do that. In terms of the garnishments that are going on of people's tax credits and social securities and wages, that has to stop as well. We have to stop this incredible collection, the incredible collection powers of the federal government that is also keeping people from achieving financial security. And we really just need to clear the books of bad debts. That $500,000 that you've been paying for 30 years shouldn't be there. People who have been in repayment for 15 years or more, people who have been on means-tested benefits for three years or more, for instance, or people who have been in default for 3 years or more. We should be clearing those books. Other companies, other lenders would be looking at these debts and saying, why are we still collecting on these? We know that most of these debts will not be paid back. Why are we spending money servicing these loans? Why are we spending money to private collectors to collect and harass borrowers for this money when all of these resources, the resources of the federal government, the individual resources, could be better spent in so many more productive ways. We need a fundamental rethinking of how our student loan system functions. And we need to get back to this idea of higher education as a public good. When we first had the Higher Education Act, the basis of it wasn't loans. It was grants for low-income students and students of color. It was this idea of opening up access and opportunity. And we have gone completely to the left of that in the current situation, where so many people have to borrow and struggle under this debt for so many years. It's not sustainable for them, it's not sustainable for their communities, and it's not sustainable for the economy.
We have commenter to here who writes, I had $60,000 of student debt and it took 20 years to pay off. Will that be rebated to me as part of the forgiveness? If not, why the distinction? I have good uses for that money. Danielle Douglas Gabriel, do you have thoughts?
To my knowledge, it would not be rebated. The cancellation policy proposals that are on the table are for people who currently have existing debt. And certainly, you know, the caller raises an argument that many people have raised about the fairness, right? For the folks who have paid off their loans, that this is unfair because they had to certainly find a way in order to pay off that debt. But, you know, the kind of counter argument there is that, kind of as you mentioned earlier with the Roxane Gay article, is that there are many programs of which all of us will not benefit, but are still largely beneficial to the society on the whole. And so that's kind of where we are with thinking about how these policies benefit people that may not be us in this respect, and how it may benefit the economy in the long run, and what it goes towards lending a hand towards greater equity for folks who are in this situation, in part because they don't have the wealth and the resources needed to finance their education in any meaningful way.
We did hear from outgoing Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos on Tuesday at the 2020 Federal Student Aid Virtual Training Conference, making kind of some forceful comments about student debt. Here she is.
We've heard shrill calls to cancel, to forgive, to make it all free. Any innocuous label out there can't obfuscate what it really is. Wrong.
She also added the truly insidious notion of government gift giving. Ashley Harrington, what's your reaction to DeVos's comments this week?
Well, first, let's be clear. The federal government has done this quote unquote gift giving many, many times in the past. It's just that now when it will disproportionately benefit borrowers of color, Black and Latino borrowers, now there's an issue. Let's go back to when the federal government literally gave people land for their home. They gave them down payments. They gave them the GI Bill, and that also didn't get to borrowers of color, right? So we have a history in this country of actually very much supporting people's economic opportunity. It just happens that it's often white people who get that support and not people of color. And the reason why we're in a situation now where Black and brown borrowers are struggling the most is because they never got that support from the very beginning. So we have a history of this. And the history goes on to this day. Let's think about the Paycheck Protection Program that's going on that we're dealing with right now, that disproportionately went to larger, wealthier, white, often white businesses, and that was supposed to be a lifeline for relief, that turned into small business grant program that went to larger companies, right? So this is not something new that the federal government is doing. It's just that now when it would impact a different set of problems, a different set of people, we're having a different conversation. I think we should all be concerned about that. And remember that, again, this is a course correction. We're asking for cancellation because the federal government and we have allowed this to get out of control. We have been doing this wrong for a very long time. And that is everything from student debt to also the other pieces that have contributed to and reinforced the racial wealth gap. So there is a lot to be done, including cancellation of student debt. And the idea that this is something new is just a false idea.
Getting some more comments from listeners. Marilee writes, when will we as a country start to look at educating our young people as an investment rather than an expense? It is shameful to saddle these kids with a lifetime of debt. It affects our economy because they can't afford to marry, get a house, buy furniture, etc. Another listener writes, while those working full-time in certain sectors can have loans forgiven, those of us who are disabled and either unable to work at all or unable to work full-time are shut out of this program. This, in a word, is ableist. And Jim writes, I'm totally against any blanket policy that cancels student loans. That would be a free ride on my taxes. I paid for my education. There should still be accountability for those who took out the loans. I would only support relief if it is based on proof of need. Again, we've been talking about student loan debt crisis and potential proposals to help ease it, particularly during the pandemic. We're joined by Danielle Douglas Gabriel with The Washington Post, Ashley Harrington at the Center for Responsible Lending, and I'm Ariana Prale. This is Forum. Let's go to the next caller, Mariah in Novato. Mariah, you're on there.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have really just a comment about the Pell Grant and the stipulations that were put on it. I think, was it 2012 or 2010, where they capped off the amount of time that you can receive the Pell Grant, and this greatly affected me because, long story short, 20 years ago I was tracked to a dental assisting program because I was a teen mom, a first-generation college student, and then I spent another year hoping to finish college with very little support and direction, so I sort of messed up. Fast forward 20 years, I finally finished community college, transferring to San Francisco State, and going into social work, and all of a sudden, the 2 years of the Pell Grant that I really was going to depend on as a single mom again was cut off, and I had to take these loans that now, 6 years out of college, I haven't been able to pay back. I got my dream job a year, I was affected by COVID with my dream job, so now I'm unemployed, decided to go back, and I'm applying for grad school because I think that's my only shot. Because with an undergraduate degree, it's like having a high school diploma. So I guess my comment is, or question is, what about the Pell Grant? What about extending that or just going back to before? If you qualify, you get it.
Danielle Douglas Gabriel, do you have any insights?
Sure. So there are efforts underway in Congress right now to lift those term limits because of exactly the kind of situation that your caller just raised about how, you know, people's path through higher education isn't always linear and there are lots of starts and stops, especially for lower income students who benefit from the program. So we have to be more considerate of that. There are also efforts underway, and President-elect Biden has certainly called for this, the doubling of the Pell Grant. Pell has not kept pace with the rate of inflation. It certainly hasn't kept pace with the cost of college. There was a point in the 70s where the Pell Grant, actually up until the 80s, the Pell Grant covered about 75% of the cost of public education. It no longer does that, even for in-state students, and in some cases, even at community colleges. So that is a critical component of any kind of reimagining of the higher education system that is in constant discussion and under consideration right now.
I have a comment from Angie who writes, I think there should be lower interest rates or no interest for federal student loans, but it seems irresponsible to take on more debt than you can handle. My daughter is a senior in high school, and we are probably sending her to community college for 2 years in order to keep her school debt down. Ashley Harrington, I mean, that does bring up some of these questions just around the opportunities that people kind of then begin parsing in that kind of environment. Can you speak a little bit to what Angie's mentioning?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is really the catch-22, right? So it's we're acting as if it's a choice to go to school and to take on this debt. I think we have to remember that the majority of jobs since the Great Recession, and more majority of jobs in general, have gone to people with some form of post-secondary education, some form of college degree, right? And so the you know, higher education, the job market, the labor market, all of these things look very different than they did 30 or 40 years ago. And so we have to remember that. So it's one thing to say, oh, you shouldn't take out all that debt. But if you have to go to school to get a better job, to get that better income, but the only way you can go to school is to take out debt because the Pell Grant hasn't kept up with inflation, because state budgets have been cut since the Great Recession, and we're not investing in public higher education the way that we should, because we have not addressed the racial wealth gap, because of all those things, you're putting people between a rock and a hard place. Either don't go to school and don't take on debt and then not be able to access more opportunity and access to higher income, or do that and have to take on all this debt and then struggle in repayment, and then we now blame you for having to take out that debt. This doesn't make sense. These right. two things are constantly in conflict with each other. It's just divorced from reality. We have to remember the reality that we live in, where we have created a system where you have to go to more and more school to succeed, and we've also created a system where you have to pay more and more for that school to succeed.
Wanted to wrap up, and I wanted to get one final comment from Daniel Douglas Gabriel as well. Just in 10 seconds, when do you think we'll really start to see some more of this clarity? Do you think it'll come before the end of the year in terms of what's going to be happening come January?
I wish it would. I doubt it. I really am thinking that we're not going to get a bit more clarity until the new year, okay. And that's going to keep a lot of people really concerned. So I'm hoping that things will change before then.
That's Danielle Douglas-Gabriel with The Washington Post, Ashley Harrington, Senator for Responsible Lending. I'm Ariana Prale. This has been Forum. Thanks for joining us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.